Venice Beach, California, weighing 230 pounds, this is the legend, this is the icon, this is
Mr. Stink.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered my home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have 2 more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster, who are you to doubt El Dandy?
Shout out to Peter in Greensboro for putting the first part of that together. Andrade calling Sting Stink is the best thing that he has done in AEW so far. But thank you, Peter, for the inspiration. This is episode 740 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, January 23rd, 2022. The number one ranked wrestling podcast on all of Podbean. In 2021, and number 4 overall in the sports category for the entire year. And that is all because of you guys. So I want to say thank you for the support. A lot to get into. Of course, tonight is the GCW pay-per-view. I'm going to be talking about that briefly here in a little bit. We got to talk about Walter. We got to talk about Jon Moxley and his comeback promo and some of the fallout from that from Dynamite this week. I got some early Royal Rumble predictions for you later in the stream. So a lot of good stuff to get into. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You will see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. That is the place to go. I want to say thank you to Darius. I already said this to him privately, but Darius, thank you again for the gift. But our PayPal producers, the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker, Naif Al-Safar, West Coast, James Herrera, Big Bear, Brian Becerra, Killshot, Keith Hart, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, the Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, the Firebomber, Craig Foster, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, John Raging Mad Riffle, and elite fan, Frankie Blyce. Let me know what your stepson thinks of Hardy the Horse. Thank you again for the email, brother. I appreciate it. Get ready to celebrate the Day of Love with Wrestle Rave live at the Houston Premier Arena on Saturday, February 12th at 7122 Avenue B, match time 7 p.m. And for just this 1 week only, between now and next week's Sound Off, you can save 20% when you use the code SOLOMONSTER at checkout for any of their events. But on this particular event, right before Valentine's Day, they're going to be crowning their first ever Wrestle Rave champion between Aaron Mercer and Max Heights. There's also going to be a Ladder of Love match, a couples therapy, no DQ match. See, I think that's how all couples should work out their issues. In a no disqualification match. Some very unique match stipulations on this card. This is their Bound by Love show. For tickets, you can find their Eventbrite link on their social media accounts. Get yourself 20% off with the code SOLOMONSTER at checkout. That's Wrestle Rave at the Houston Premier Arena. We are coming to a close in the next week with our 9th annual Royal Rumble Facebook pool. We've got over 1,400 entries so far. Still a week to go. There's still time to enter. Just find the pinned post in the private Solo Monster Sounds Off group on Facebook by Zach Holker and hit the like button. Numbers have already been issued to everybody who entered. Of course, they'll be entered more throughout the week as more people jump into the contest. He'll be adding more pools. So again, it's not too late. I see that I drew number 22 this year. I like that. I like my chances. So I will be pulling for the number 22 entrant in the men's and women's Rumble matches. If the winner enters at your number, you win your pool. And then you move on to the Ultimate Rumble pool. I will then be doing a live drawing, probably on the Dynamite stream the following Wednesday. where I will pick the top three grand prize. Well, of course, I'm excused from all of this. I might win my own pool, but I would not be going on to the Ultimate Rumble pool. That would be a clear conflict of interest. But we'll do the Ultimate Rumble pool drawing, and I'll pick three grand prize winners. So prizes and details, they're all outlined in Zach's post. Shout out to Zach. Shout out to Julian Cannon as well for his contributions. Their work is much appreciated. They help make this fun every year. So if you have not yet gotten in on that, please do so. I'm going to have some cool news to share with you about this month's Wrestle Rumble contest a little bit later. If you are a YouTube channel member, this is your reminder here, since I haven't mentioned it on the main podcast yet, that I did a watch-along. So we have 1 week left until the Royal Rumble. Perfect time for you to sit back and take 90 minutes out of your day and catch the 1992 Royal Rumble watch-along that I did for channel members. It was clarified to me, by the way, I made a comment last week that you have to be on desktop to see the join button and become a channel member. Apparently that might only be for people maybe in certain countries, because there are a lot of people who signed up to be a channel member through mobile. So I guess you can do it through mobile. So anyway, if you want to gain access to the watch-along, it is up for all levels, all tiers of channel members. Tonight is The World on GCW, airing on Fight TV and traditional pay-per-view at 8 p.m. Eastern. This is the biggest event in GCW history, their debut at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City, the Manhattan Center, a building I've been in many times before for Ring of Honor. A lot of wrestling history in that building, a lot of fun times. And tonight, GCW will be making their own memories, and I will be live on YouTube when the event is over for the full recap, my very first GCW review on the channel. They are beginning with a Pabst Blue Ribbon Battle Royal on their kickoff show, airing at 7 Eastern on their YouTube channel. Eddie Kingston is off the show with an orbital injury, so he will not be wrestling AJ Gray, as was originally scheduled. The main card has a scramble match with Jack Cartwheel, Dante Leon, the Grim Reaper, Ninja Mac, Alex Zane, and Nick Wayne. There is a Grab the Brass Ring ladder match with Leo Rush, who I'm going to be talking about him as well in a little bit. PCO, Tony Deppen, Alex Colon, Jimmy Lloyd, and the winner can name the match of their choice against anyone at any time. That is the stipulation. Team Bandito takes on Team Gringo. We've got Jeff Jarrett against Effie. Matt Cardona with Chelsea Green takes on Joey Janela. Ruby Soho against Ally Catch. GCW Tag Team Champions the Briscoes will be there with an open challenge. Sounds like a potential FTR appearance, although I think Tony Khan would be mad to give that match away somewhere else instead of doing it in AEW. But they have been beefing with FTR on social media now for weeks. So if the Briscoes are laying down an open challenge, I'm just saying it would make sense for FTR to show up tonight. ROH World Champion Jonathan Gresham defends against Blake Christian, and GCW World Champion Jon Moxley defends against Homicide. Moxley made a surprise appearance last night for Northeast Wrestling at their WrestleFest event in the opening contest. He also fell off the stage when he came out. I don't know if you saw the video, but he fell off the stage. That could have ended very badly. He recovered nicely, but he took a bit of a tumble there as he was making his way out to the ring. But yeah, you never know who's going to show up these days at one of these independent shows. So if you have an independent wrestling show in your area and you're on the fence about going, go. Tuesday night on NXT, Walter had a match against Roderick Strong. And it was a battle. It was the best thing on the show from the two veterans. I would expect nothing less. Walter recently moved to the U.S., and wrestled his final match for the NXT UK brand, which I talked about last week. I thought it was the match of the week. They called it Walter's Last Stand, and it was a great match. So this was his official arrival on NXT 2.0. After the match, he hijacked the microphone, and he declared the winner of the match as Gunther. or Gunta, as he pronounced it. Before the other members of Imperium ganged up on Roddy, that brought out the rest of Diamond Mine, and all hell broke loose. Although not quite as much as it did on social media when this show went off the air. It was 3 years ago this month that Walter made his NXT UK debut at the end of TakeOver Blackpool. He got in the ring to confront the then NXT UK champion, I guess they were the WWE UK champion, Pete Dunne. And people were very excited. I had only been marginally familiar with the man's work. People who were really into the European wrestling scene would write into the show and tell me about this guy, Walter. You know, he's a beast, you gotta see him. And he would chop the shit out of people. And I just remember thinking, the first time that I heard his name, could there be a less intimidating name for a pro wrestler than Walter? And as I started to watch more of his work, I quickly realized why people were raving about the guy. And suddenly the name Walter didn't seem to matter much to me. I quickly became a fan of his work. He had given an interview to The Mirror a few months before that, before he debuted. And he was very clear at the time. He had no interest in going to Raw or SmackDown if WWE came calling. He said he did not want to live in the United States. New Japan had made him an offer around that time. He turned them down because he didn't want to move to Japan. He didn't want to go on any extended tours. But he did sign with WWE. And within months, they made him their United Kingdom champion. For 870 days, Walter held that UK title. Until he dropped it to Ilya Dragunov at TakeOver 36, the last TakeOver ever. A very appropriate place for his run to come to an end. And that's when the rumors started that Walter may have had a change of heart. Walter might be more open to going to Raw or SmackDown. Walter supposedly split with his wife. He has started dating Ginny from the NXT UK women's division. They started posting pictures with each other all over social media. And now he is suddenly open to moving to the US. His brief flirtation with the main roster a few years ago did not exactly inspire a lot of confidence about what a future for him on Raw or SmackDown would look like. Had he stuck around, it would not have taken very long for him to be dancing on TV. Walter has been under contract to this company for 3 years. As Walter, which is his birth name, that is his real name. And as we know, WWE likes to own you. They like to own you. They want to own your name. They want to own your likeness. They want to own your soul. And they want to make as much money off of you as possible and stop you from then taking that name somewhere else if you ever leave. And it's very likely that you will leave at some point. We are seeing in increasing numbers people who will leave. WWE ends up not being the end-all be-all for them. They either choose to leave or they get cut. But it seems to be happening at a higher rate now than at any other point that I can remember. So I wouldn't sit here and say Walter is going to be a lifer in this company. It's very likely at some point that he will leave. And will end up back on the independent scene or will end up, you know, working for another company. So I get, if you put yourself in WWE's mind and the way they operate, I understand why they do these things. But it doesn't make it any less upsetting when they take somebody's name that they have developed in wrestling for over, I mean, a period of years, and they take it away from them and they start calling them something else. It is stupid. It is very, very stupid. But stupid does not begin to describe this company filing to trademark the name of an old German U-boat commander from World War II, which they plan to use for Walter. They filed the application 1 week earlier. I had only read about it earlier that day. That he wrestled Roddy on TV. It was Louis Dangor who first reported on Twitter that a simple Google search turned up that Gunther Stark, which was the name they trademarked or filed to trademark, was in fact not the name of Iron Man's German half-brother, Gunther Stark was the name of a Nazi naval commander whose boat was sunk in the English Channel in 1944. And this was the name that they were going to give to Walter. And when people started talking about the connection on social media, it blew up in the company's face. There were mainstream articles online about this. And by the time Walter rebranded himself on TV at the end of the show on Tuesday, he was only Gunther, and not Gunther Stark. But the company got a lot of negative publicity for it, and rightfully so. It is embarrassing that nobody there can be bothered to do a simple Google search to make sure that this sort of thing does not happen. That, or they just figured that nobody would care. But when you have wrestling websites like PW Insider, they've been doing this now for years, reporting on every little trademark filing that WWE does, every little trademark filing that AEW does to, you know, give us a sense of what characters might be coming in or what the new name of an upcoming show or an upcoming pay-per-view might be. You know, these trademark filings sometimes make headlines on the wrestling news websites because they can give us a sense of what's coming. You didn't have this issue 20 years ago. We didn't hear about these sorts of things, even though it was, you know, publicly accessible. But we didn't read about the trademark filings 15, 20, 25 years ago. Because we didn't have the websites to just pop onto and read about these sorts of things before. They weren't reported on the way that they are today. Whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, I saw a lot of people this week, oh, if this was, you know, 25 years ago during the Attitude Era, nobody would have known. Well, it was a different time. Of course nobody would have known because it wasn't being reported on. But now it is. And the companies have to be cognizant of this. That when they go and they do stuff like this, people are going to find out about it. They're going to report on it. It's going to become public knowledge. It's a different world now. Otherwise, I never would have known who Gunther Stark even was. It's not as if he was goose-stepping next to Hitler and was a household name. But the reality is people do look these things up, and when it comes out, it is very embarrassing. If you don't do your due diligence, it can be very embarrassing. I would be upset to jump on Twitter and find out that WWE had just unknowingly named me after a Nazi lieutenant. And now, when people look me up, they might also find information out about this other person. Remember when Triple H was on with Steve Austin and he was asked about China and the Hall of Fame and he gave this cockamamie excuse about, well, you know, we don't want children Googling her. For fear of what people might find, all the porn. Well, I wouldn't want people jumping on Google either or social media and finding out that I was given the name and likeness of someone like this. That would be upsetting to me if I were in that person's shoes. But that's the issue I had with them doing what they did. Contrary to all the e-drones online who thought I was referring only to the name Gunther, when I initially tweeted about this, I was referring to the trademark filing for the full name. Yes, I have heard the name Gunther before. It is not a Nazi name. I understand that. You should have seen the messages that I got showing me pictures of the barista from Friends, who I couldn't identify this guy in a lineup if I tried. I could not possibly care any less because I have never watched a full episode of Friends in my entire life. I've seen bits and pieces. I'm aware of who the main characters are on the show. I'm sorry, I couldn't identify who the barista from Friends was. I was more of a Seinfeld guy myself. We learned a few days later, in fact, actually, I think it was the very next day, that WWE abandoned the trademark for the name Gunther Stark after getting egg all over their face. He's still Gunther, but they wisely decided against moving forward with the Stark part of his name. And it's funny, I tweeted that follow-up once that information came out that they had dropped the application, they had dropped the trademark filing, and so I put another tweet up, and I got a message from someone calling me a moron for carrying water for WWE rather than taking them to task. I swear, it's getting harder and harder to keep track of which company I'm biased for. I mean, one day I'm carrying water for WWE, the next day I'm kissing AEW's ass. I mean, the direct deposits from Vince McMahon and Tony Khan, they must be going to the same place. But nobody bothered to give me the account number. I can't seem to gain access to the funds that they are funneling to me. It's comments like that that give me all the validation I need to know that I am doing things the right way. So by all means, please, keep tweeting stupid shit at me. These people are truly dumber than dirt. As I said the other night, I offer my apologies to dirt for even making that comparison. It was wrong of me. It was wrong of me to compare these deranged children to something that has been around for millions of years. I mean, dirt predates all of us. It just sits there and it minds its own business. It didn't do anything wrong. It did not deserve that comparison. So to wrap this up, Walter is now Gunther. I think it is beyond idiotic to let him keep his name for 3 years while under contract to your company and then change it. And I'm sure he's under a different contract now. It was a different type of contract maybe when he was with NXT. I don't give a shit. He was working for WWE. He was working for this company for 3 years. And then they change his name. It's not like he's a nobody. People know who he is. He's built up a name over all these years. And then they take it away from him. Now, maybe he didn't want to sign the rights over to them. And you know what? I wouldn't blame him at all if that was the case. But I think back to how I felt about the name Walter when I first heard about him. I got used to it. We will get used to Gunther too. Because at the end of the day, it's still the same guy, and so long as he's on my TV chopping the shit out of people, that's what matters the most. But the minute they have him fucking dancing in the ring, I'm going off. I am going off. Meanwhile, WrestleVotes on Twitter said that internally, WWE is said to be disappointed with NXT 2.0 in its first 4 months, thinking that more fans would have gravitated towards the newer stars quicker than they have. And they said that they don't expect any changes to the concept yet. I find this hard to believe. I mean, every week in the commercial, we hear the cool voiceover guy telling us, yeah, it's like that. So am I to believe that it is in fact not like that? Have I been lied to? It hasn't even been 6 months yet. And if this is true, these people honestly expected the developmental show with stars that nobody has ever seen or heard of before would be doing better numbers than the previous version of NXT. I got news for you. Even that version of NXT wasn't doing great. It wasn't doing great numbers. But it was doing better than they are now. Now, you've turned it into a full-blown developmental show. What did they think would happen? This show does not belong on USA Network. If anything, it belongs on Peacock. Andrew Zarian of the Matt Men podcast spoke to a source at WWE about what WrestleVotes tweeted, and it does sound like there's legitimacy to it. He said, according to his source, a lot of the blame is being put on the abruptness of how everything was changed. Fan perception of the product is not helping either, according to this person. NXT will never do big numbers. That's not what developmental is supposed to be. They used to hide these people away until they were ready for prime time, going back all the way to the OVW days. So unless you watch the television in Louisville, locally, you didn't even know people like John Cena and Brock Lesnar existed until the first time you saw them on Raw or on SmackDown when John Cena walked out to confront Kurt Angle and said, "Ruthless aggression." That was the first time we saw him on TV. You know, when Brock Lesnar showed up randomly after WrestleMania and with Paul Heyman at his side and he was laying waste to everybody, that was the first time we ever laid eyes on the guy. That's why, you know, it's like, holy shit, look at this guy. Built like a tank. I had never seen him before. I had read about him online and in the newsletters, but I didn't even know what he looked like. You're not getting a million people to tune in for fucking Von Wagner and the Creed Brothers. And as much as I like Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes, they've only been pushing them for 4 months. If this was their vision, and I'm not even saying it was a completely incorrect vision to want to build new stars. I'm never going to say it's a bad thing to want to build new stars. I think there was a different way to go about doing it instead of blowing the whole thing up. But if this is what you wanted to do, you have to commit to it. You have to give it time. You know, for all the crap that people give fans for having no patience and having, you know, the attention span of a gnat and all this stuff, Vince McMahon doesn't come across as the most patient person in the world either. Maybe with USA, they feel like they don't have that time. Another reason why this show does not belong to be on USA or any major cable network. It should be on Peacock. It should be on their own network. And then they can work at their own pace. Developing talent takes time. You know, you got what you wanted. You kicked Triple H to the curb and you implemented your new vision. Now you have to see that vision through if you truly believe in it. Because we do need the Bron Breakkers and we do need the Carmelo Hayeses and the Grayson Wallers of the world to do well and to carry this company into the future. Road Dogg, actually, and every time I hear about Road Dogg's tweets making headlines, I roll my fucking eyes. Road Dogg replied to the WrestleVotes tweet, disagreeing with their sources take. And he gave exactly the kind of response that you would expect. He said they can do no... He literally said these words. He said they can do no wrong. WWE can do no wrong. He said WWE can do no wrong. They're getting paid for content. And at the same time, they're developing new characters. And he said every show wishes their ratings were higher. And he put in parenthesis in reference to the ratings, which mean nothing. Oh boy. Road Dogg wins for sad tweet of the week. The ratings do not matter. We'll see if he feels the same way should the NXT ratings continue to decline, because I still believe that this show will be off USA before this year is over. But whether they are or not, we'll see where the numbers are at the end of the year. Now on the show on Tuesday, the Creed brothers advanced in the Dusty Cup with a win over Briggs and Jensen. Legado del Fantasma lost to the team of Malik Blade and Idris Inofe, which the announcers called a bracket buster. Santos Escobar got involved. That brought out Bron Breakker, who carried Escobar away, and that was enough of a distraction for Blade to roll up Joaquin Wilde for the win. So it sends the underdog team into the next round. Right now, they're kind of the feel-good story so far of this tournament. And it's also the spark for a Bron Breakker-Santos Escobar feud. But they will face the winners of the match this Tuesday between MSK and Jacket Time. They had a segment where Tony D'Angelo held a mock funeral for Pete Dunne, who he beat the week before with a crowbar. He said now he was going after the North American Championship. And Cameron Grimes came out, said the same thing, and Carmelo Hayes, the champion, he suggested that they have a match to determine who the next challenger would be. So this Tuesday, it'll be Grimes against D'Angelo, which should be a win for Cameron Grimes. We have not seen Saray on NXT in a couple of months. She had a terrible match against Lash Legend on 205 Live last month, and I don't blame Saray for that. The match was so horrible, she fled the country. She had to go into hiding for the past month. She flew back to Japan. That's how bad that match was. And so she's been MIA for the past month. Until this week, when they aired a vignette promoting her return. They had her dressed up in pigtails like a schoolgirl in these wireframe glasses. Narrating, at first she was narrating in Japanese with English subtitles saying, 2021 was my first year here, but everything didn't go as planned. I returned to Japan to recover both physically and mentally. At one point, I wanted to give up, but then I found the necklace that my grandmother gave me when I was a little girl. Grandma was my hero. She was strong and taught me to never give up under any circumstances. Thanks to finding my necklace, I feel like I can conquer the world. This necklace reminds me who I am and where I come from. And then she switched over to English and she said, inside the ring, I am the warrior of the sun, but outside, I am just Saray, and that's okay. Oh god, she's rhyming now. Now I will return back to America and NXT with a new passion and energy. So she is still calling herself the Warrior of the Sun, but they are giving her a backstory. Now, I don't know if her grandmother's necklace is going to be a magical necklace or not. Maybe she'll come back as a heel and she'll bash people over the head with it and act all sweet and nice outside the ring. The video itself was fine. I don't have an issue with them trying to flesh her character out a bit more. She really didn't have a character at all before. She was just Saray, the Warrior of the Sun. Kind of generic. We didn't know anything else about her. This is the first real personality profile of any kind I think that they've done on her. You know, maybe outside of whatever vignette when she first debuted that I don't remember. So I'm taking a wait-and-see approach on this. I saw a lot of hate for this on social media. I'm taking a wait-and-see approach. They didn't say when she would be returning to the ring. Hopefully it doesn't take as long as it's taking for Veer to come. As long as she keeps that killer basement dropkick of hers, which looks badass, we'll see how they flesh the character out. But she needed something. I agree that she needed something. I don't know if this is it or not. Grandma's necklace, if that's going to be the best story for her, but at least it's something. And they closed the show with the Walter match against Roddy. By the way, Scotty Too Hotty, who quit his job as a coach at the Performance Center a few months back, after he saw what they did to NXT, he said, I see the writing on the wall here. I got to get the hell out of here. He was a guest on Talk is Jericho, and he revealed a very odd request that Vince McMahon had, specifically for the coaches, after they blew up NXT and took it away from Triple H and started doing the revamp. He said Vince wanted the coaches looking younger, and he wanted them to start dyeing their beards and cutting their hair. This coming from a guy who appears on television every week looking like the Crypt Keeper. He wants the behind-the-scenes staff, who rarely, if ever, show up on camera. They don't appear in front of fans. He wants them to look younger. But yet he has no problem showing up on Raw every week looking like a melted wax candle. Truly one of a kind. The man is truly one of a kind. There is not anybody on the planet like Vince McMahon. AEW Dynamite was back over a million viewers on TBS and was number one on all of cable Wednesday night with the return of Jon Moxley back on TV for the first time since October before checking himself into rehab for alcohol addiction. If you look at the before and after photos of Mox when we last saw him compared to the way he looks now, he looks like a totally different person. I mean, he leaned out a lot, but his face was so puffed up before and swollen. And now he looks more like Dean Ambrose, but still sounds like Jon Moxley on the mic. The first words out of his mouth to a heckler in the audience was, "Go fuck yourself." Chris Jericho is trying so hard to get GFY over as his new catchphrase. He put it on a t-shirt. That's his new t-shirt now. And there's Jon Moxley on his first night back just blurting it out on live TV, uncensored. I love it. That Jericho GFY stuff is very lame. I mean, I know the guy got a scarf over and a plant and a list and the word it. But this is not going to work. But what got Moxley upset was this one douchebag in the crowd who shouted, "Get the garbage truck and get the trash out of the ring." I turned the audio up and listened to it back, and that's what he said. The guy who just missed 3 months after admitting that he had a problem with alcohol is making his first appearance. He's about to bare his soul here and cut what you know is going to be this heartfelt promo. And this halfwit thinks that this would be a great moment to yell something like that. Now, I don't agree that he should have been kicked out or anything like Moxley said he should. And I don't believe he was. But you gotta know when to read the room and just keep your mouth shut. Advice that Bully Ray would have been well served to take. I'll get to him in a moment. But Moxley talked about having a dream about a black cloud hanging over him and the demons chasing after him his whole life. Nobody gets through life unscathed. We all carry scars. Sometimes we try to pretend those scars aren't there, and those are the scars that give us strength. He said nobody is perfect, and if they were, the world would be a very boring place. And he thanked everybody who supported him, said that he's been to hell. There's nobody in AEW who can put him through worse than he's already been through. It was short. It was to the point. It was genuine. He didn't have to tell anybody, except Tony Khan, his boss, what he was really going through at the time. He could have kept it to himself and just taken time off to get better. You know, he comes back looking the way he does and, you know, people start asking questions. He can tell them, well, I was out rehabbing an injury or something. But he chose to tell the truth. So good for him. Maybe him doing that will help somebody else. One thing I did not come away from that promo thinking, and no rational, sane human being would have either, is disappointment that Jon Moxley did not apologize to the fans. One thing I was not waiting on as I watched Moxley come out on Wednesday was, I'm waiting for my apology. Because who in their right mind would come away from that promo thinking the man owed us anything? Bully Ray. That's who. Bully Ray, who we all know loves heat. Oh, he loves heat. He loves heat more than Satan himself. The only man in the world to actually turn the thermostat up in the summertime because it's not hot enough is Bully Ray. On Busted Open Radio Thursday, he and Dave LaGreca were discussing the Moxley promo when Bully chimed in with a mind-bogglingly stupid take. I mean, there are bad takes and then there are Bully Ray bad takes. So this is what Brother Ray had to say. They came out with a bang, people were ready for it, and Moxley said what he needed to say. However, I would have liked to have heard just a little bit of accountability from John. I understand the whole demons thing, and we always use the word demons as a creative word to get around the real issues. Everybody has some kind of demon that they have to get around. These demons got the best of John for a time, where he had to step away from AEW. I would have liked to have heard him say a bit of an apology to the AEW fans. You don't have to apologize to the boys, even though the boys do count on you, but any one of those guys and gals could have had the same problems that you did. And trust me, I came up in an era where a slew of men and women had their demons. The fans expect a little bit more from you. What about the fans that bought tickets to see AEW and Jon Moxley while Jon was away taking care of his problems? I'm very happy he left and took care of his problem, and he looked incredibly healthy last night, and I love everything he said. I just would have loved to have heard a little bit of accountability. I don't know if I'm sorry is necessarily the right word, but maybe endear yourself a little bit to the crowd if you felt you let them down. Personally, if it was me in the same situation, the first thing I would have said is, guys, I'm sorry if I let you down. I think that would have been the proper thing to do. This was so stupid that I had to listen to the audio twice to make sure that I wasn't missing any context, that I wasn't hearing things that I only thought I was hearing. There is no additional context needed. I can only hope that he is doing this on purpose just to get people talking about his show and that he doesn't honestly feel that way because that would make it worse. Jon Moxley does not owe the fans anything. And based on the crowd response in the building, it didn't sound like he needed to endear himself to the crowd any more than he did. Brother Ray talks about accountability. You want to know what accountability is? Accountability is recognizing that you have a problem. And that you have a wife. And you have a newborn at home. And even though you've got a big pay-per-view match coming up, your health and your family is more important than a soap opera on TV. Accountability is checking yourself into rehab and telling your boss, I don't want you to lie for me. Let everybody know where I am. Let them know why I'm there. I got nothing to hide. Now, a lot of people would be ashamed to admit that. He wasn't. That's accountability. He held himself accountable. He was accountable to his family. And who knows, maybe he apologized privately to Tony Khan and the AEW roster. We don't know. But the idea that, oh, I wish Jon Moxley would have held himself accountable to the fans that he screwed over because they bought tickets to see him wrestle and he dared to go get himself cleaned up instead is truly the dumbest take of the year. And it's only January. We're not even out of the first month of the year yet. And I've already heard the stupidest fucking thing that I've heard in 2022. It's like the idiots who shit on CM Punk when he left WWE because we bought your house. We bought your house. You didn't buy shit. You would have been better off spending that money on your meds. There's a lot of people out there who need them from what I've seen on social media this week. This was a dumb take from somebody who is not to be taken seriously. Bully Ray is a clown. And from this fan, since Bully thought Moxley should be more accountable to you and me, from this fan, he doesn't owe me a damn thing. I'm just happy to see him back and healthy again. Now on Rampage, Moxley won his first match back against Ethan Page. And while he was exiting through the crowd to the back, Bryan Danielson showed up, applauding him for his win. And Moxley stared at him before continuing to the back. So we got our first tease of a match between Jon Moxley and Bryan Danielson, which is going to be great. That would set up one big match for the Revolution pay-per-view in March. I look ahead to that card. I also see Britt Baker defending her AEW women's title against Jamie Hayter. They've been teasing a lot of dissension between those two now for a while. I don't think they're going to tease that out much more, you know, any more than they've done with MJF and Wardlow. And I think that they're probably holding off until Double or Nothing to do the match with Thunder Rosa. So I see Baker and Hayter as more likely for Revolution. And then there's Hangman Page, the AEW World Champion. Obviously, he has an issue ongoing right now with Lance Archer. Not a match that I would say for Revolution. I think that needs to happen on TV sooner than that. And after Hangman wins, I'm thinking they set up Adam Cole as the next challenger for the AEW World Championship. Adam Cole is wrestling Orange Cassidy this Wednesday in a lights out match. Cole tweeted that he is undefeated in AEW for a reason, and after I win, it's time to move on to bigger and better things. Now keep in mind, Adam Cole can lose to Orange Cassidy this week and it would not affect his spot in the standings because wins and losses don't count in lights out matches. It's a non-sanctioned match. You know, case in point, Britt Baker lost to Thunder Rosa last year in a lights out match and then went on a few months later to become the AEW Women's Champion. So with Moxley and Danielson being set up, Punk is occupied with MJF. You know, even if they do that match, the first match between Punk and MJF, let's say next month, then the rematch would likely be at Revolution. So Punk is occupied right now. Like I said, Mox and Danielson seems to be the direction. I think Hangman defends against Adam Cole at Revolution. That's the match to do, with Hangman being the one to hand Cole his first official loss. And then coming out of that show, if Kenny Omega is back at that point, you can begin the slow build to Omega and the Bucks against Cole, Fish, and O'Reilly. Now, Leo Rush took to social media 24 hours ago to announce that he will become a free agent as of Valentine's Day, February 14th. That is the date that his contract is expiring with AEW. He did not clarify if it was his choice not to renew or if it was AEW's choice to simply let the contract expire. But PW Insider says there are a number of deals coming up in the next few months that AEW plans to let quietly expire. So I think it's safe to assume that Leo Rush is probably among those names. And AEW, i.e. Tony Khan, has decided to not extend his deal or re-sign him to a new one. Which is very interesting. Given that not 2 weeks ago on this very podcast, I did my predictions for 2022. And what I predicted on that show, if you will recall, is that this year we would see several AEW talent departures. Not mass cuts, like WWE does, but rather Tony Khan would allow contracts to quietly expire for people that they're not actively using, which only makes sense since they're still in acquisition mode. They're signing new names. Tony Khan is still talking about debuts coming up and surprises. There's talk about maybe Johnny Gargano in Cleveland this week at the Beach Break show. We'll see, you know, what happens there. Brody King just debuted on TV a couple of weeks ago. All right, O'Reilly a few weeks before that. So they're still signing new names. They got to make room somehow. And I mentioned Brian Cage is one of the obvious names likely to leave. I said when their deals come due, it's going to be a case where they're going to quietly not be renewed. Lo and behold, here we are. Peter Avalon's deal recently expired, right? The librarian. I guess they can still use him if they want on a per-appearance deal, but his deal is done. Brian Cage is another one whose deal is set to be coming up very soon. He has not wrestled a match for AEW since October, and he's not been hurt. Even though, you know, he's been backstage at all the shows, he's not injured. Joey Janela's deal is set to be expiring, as is Marco Stunt. They seem to have moved away from the whole Jurassic Express thing on TV. They just refer to Jungle Boy now and Luchasaurus. There's been no mention of Marco Stunt. I guess he's been doing stuff for auditioning for that TV show, The Voice, but it looks like he may be reaching the end of his run there as well. Now, they could always reach a new deal with any or all of these people between now and then, but that is where things stand at the moment. But this was inevitable. And people are going to use the false equivalency of this to WWE firing 80 wrestlers last year, like it's the exact same thing. Firing 80 wrestlers long before their contracts were even due. And they'll compare it like it's apples and apples and not apples and oranges. But that's what the tribalists do, right? What's good for one is good for the other, except when it's not. Except when it's not even close to the same thing. Now, I can't speak to why AEW has not done anything with Brian Cage. That remains a mystery to me. You know, people will say, well, his wife made derogatory comments, which she really, I mean, look, I can understand her frustration, but they weren't using him even before Melissa Santos went public with the comments that she did in that interview with Chris Van Vliet. So it remains a mystery to me exactly what happened there. I mean, they booted him out of Team Taz, and really, we haven't seen him since. It's a very weird situation. There's no reason that he shouldn't be doing something on television, although I guess being kept off is better than being on TV and doing jobs every week. I heard that he and Will Ospreay had a killer match last night for the Warrior Wrestling promotion, and Ospreay got on the mic after the match and said Cage should be on TV every week. He put him over. I've taken AEW to task for not doing enough with Santana and Ortiz. Those two have largely wasted the last year and a half of their career. And I was really gung-ho on them when they first came in and they put them together with Jericho and the Inner Circle. I said, man, what a great prominent spot for them to be in, hand-picked to be in Jericho's new group when Jericho was still one of the top, you know, three names in the promotion at the time. And look at what they have done or haven't done with Santana and Ortiz in the last 18 months. It's ridiculous. There is no defense for it. And then there's Leo Rush. Now, I see a lot of people claiming that Tony Khan didn't renew his deal because he was upset that Leo called him out publicly for the way that he responded to Big Swole. When Tony Khan tweeted that response to Big Swole's accusations about AEW, and, you know, all of these different things. Tony Khan went into this whole thing about diversity and how diverse the roster is, but then he made the comment about how I didn't renew her contract because she just wasn't a very good wrestler. And then he said, watch Rampage tonight. Street fight tonight. Watch Rampage tonight. But it was that little dig in there that people really took issue with. And Leo Rush was among the people who had a very big problem with that. And went on social media and said that he's fucking pissed. And then, in all caps, I think he tagged Tony Khan. He said to his boss, Tony Khan, publicly on social media, he demanded that he apologize for what he had done. And that probably was not the wisest move to do. The wisest move to make is to go on social media and demand that your boss apologize and to go off, you know, the way that he did, which he's certainly free to do. But I will say that was not exactly a great career move for him. But I also don't buy into this idea that the reason he's leaving is because of that. I don't buy that. I don't believe that's the only reason at play. So you're going to hear people saying that. I don't think that's the case. That's kind of an easy, low-hanging fruit kind of thing to point to. But if you remember, Leo put out another statement not long after that. Obviously, he had some kind of a meeting or a conversation with Tony Khan after this. And Leo put out a follow-up statement talking about how proud he was to work for a boss like Tony Khan. You know, Tony Khan was liking Leo's tweets as recently as a few days ago about his album. Because, you know, Leo Rush also has an album and he's got some songs. And Tony Khan was liking his tweets on social media. So, you know, obviously if there's any kind of heat, supposed heat, from one end or the other, it's obviously not that bad. It's not like they're not on speaking terms. I think any talk of there being heat one way or the other is being greatly over-exaggerated. If his contract is expiring in 3 weeks, then that must have been a really short-term deal to begin with. This guy was not signed to a long-term contract. And I don't get the sense that Leo Rush is somebody who likes staying in one place for any length of time, which is why he didn't sign a long-term contract. You know, he did an interview recently where he referred to himself as a lone wolf. He works for multiple promotions. In fact, he's on the GCW show tonight. This guy's everywhere. Even that reality show that he was on last year, The Challenge, which at one time was kicking everybody's ass in the ratings, including AEW. He was on The Challenge, I think, about a year ago, a little over a year ago. He left the show early, after only a few episodes. He said living in that house triggered him because he lived in a group home when he was a teenager, and for his mental health, he had to quit the show and get out of the house. I don't get the sense that being locked into a contract with any one company is good for this guy's mental health. And if I were a promoter, if I wanted to use Leo Rush, it would be on a per appearance basis for special events. Leo Rush clearly cannot do contracts with a wrestling company like you would do with WWE or AEW. And if I were Vince McMahon, if I were Tony Khan and Leo Rush, you know, we were having a conversation about coming in, there would be a very short cap on what I would have him doing and how long I would bring him in for. I would not feel comfortable signing this guy to a contract. I don't think he can be relied upon. He's an independent wrestler, through and through. He's like a vagabond. That should be his nickname, the wrestling vagabond, Leo Rush, bouncing from one place to another. Now we know why he got replaced by Jay Lethal in the storyline with Team Taz. So I would not jump to any conclusions about this having solely to do with the Big Swole stuff. I mean, even before the Big Swole stuff went down, how many weeks was it since we saw Leo on television? It had to be at least a few weeks. It wasn't like he was on television every single week and then boom, the Big Swole stuff happened and we didn't see him again. You know, Fightful says he hasn't even been seen backstage at any AEW shows. Actually, I think since early December, now that I think about it. So he was probably off television for at least 3 or 4 weeks before the Big Swole stuff even happened on New Year's Eve. It doesn't make sense that that would be the only reason why his deal is not being renewed. It's clear to me that this was never going to work. And it's too bad because he's very talented. Nobody with a brain is saying that Leo Rush is not talented. But if this guy wants his independence, then he belongs on the independent scene, not under contract to WWE or AEW. Other news and notes. Last Sunday, Mustafa Ali posted a message on social media stating that he has a message much bigger than his dreams in pro wrestling, and that despite his best efforts, he will not be able to deliver that message while working with WWE. And he was requesting his release from the company. Well, now we know that WWE has denied that request. This according to Fightful Select. They claim that WWE and Ali did speak to each other and they alerted him that they would not be granting his request at this time. So that doesn't mean they can't grant it later on, but right now they are denying his request. And the report says that Ali has years left on his deal. Not months, years. And that while some suspected he had been out on paternity leave, because he hasn't wrestled a match since October 29th against Drew McIntyre, in fact, he had only asked for one show off for that. And he has been available to use ever since, and they've just chosen not to use him. Now, if you remember, Ali posted this very well-produced vignette on Twitter back in November. It was shot by Craig Mitchell, a videographer out of Chicago, with the following caption. He said, "A few weeks ago, I made a statement that some deemed controversial. My intentions were to bring a beautiful vision to life. Unfortunately, for reasons beyond my control, I won't be able to make that vision a reality, but I can share with you what could have been." And this is when he says that a few weeks ago he made certain comments, that was a reference to the promo he cut after the match with McIntyre, where he went on the mic and he said, you know, "You people, you know, will never accept me because of my name." And you could kind of see the direction that this was going in. But this, in this vignette here, he was dressed in a suit at a podium at, I guess, what was supposed to be a political rally, talking about a new America, talking about how despite being born in the United States, he still has to fight for acceptance because of his name and the clothes that he wears. He was basically playing off racism in America. Now, he went and did that vignette on his own. And yet, it was after that last match he had against McIntyre. Again, I mentioned he got on the mic to address the crowd. He said, "You people." So right there, you knew where this was headed. And said that, "You will never accept me because my name is Mustafa Ali." And I rolled my eyes and I said, this is typical Vince McMahon. Giving him the angry foreigner character. You know, it's something I believe Ali has said in the past that he never wanted to do. But the vignette that he shot seemed to lean into it. So I can't say for sure whether it was his idea or WWE's idea. Regardless of whose idea it was, I didn't like where it was headed. So if we come to find out that this was all his idea, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden I like it. I mean, the vignette was shot very well. But I was not a fan of where that whole thing seemed to be headed. But the Fightful report noted that the character was initially accepted by WWE before those in power, and we know who that is, changed their mind. And then I guess Vince pitched something else that Ali really felt strongly against doing. And that led to a heated argument between the two of them. Whatever the idea was, Ali was not willing to do it, and he has been off television ever since. I can only imagine what it was that Vince McMahon wanted this man to do. That he was so upset he got into a shouting match with him over it. So now the company is saying, no, you can't leave. They said the same thing to Luke Harper, kept him on ice for months before eventually cutting him. He asked for his release in April, and they cut him in December. I think the same thing is likely to happen with Ali. He might not even have to wait that long. But just because they said no now doesn't mean that in a few months they won't turn around and cut him. Because you know there's going to be another wave of cuts. If not before WrestleMania, the last few years, the pattern has been they do their spring cleaning every April, mid-April, so you know it's coming. I wouldn't at all be surprised to see him on that list. They might wait a few months and then let him go. But on Friday, he tweeted out a photo of Heath Ledger as the Joker in The Dark Knight, standing in front of the giant stack of burning cash, and if you remember in that scene, he says, "It's not about money, it's about sending a message. Everything burns." It's really awful what they do to some of these people. It's one thing if they have plans to utilize the guy, but if they're going to keep him off television out of spite, then they obviously don't value him. Just let the guy move on. Yeah, I know, oh, it sets a precedent and everything. If you're not going to do anything with him, and you're only keeping him off television out of spite over some disagreement, let him move on. Just part ways and let him move on. If he's unhappy, and it's very clear the company doesn't think they can make money with him, because if they did, he'd be on TV right now, then just let him leave. You know, they released 80 wrestlers last year without batting an eyelash, and now they have one who wants to leave, and they refuse to let him go. You know what he needs to do? He needs to open up a Twitch account. That's what he needs to do. That ought to do the trick. Just start gaming on Twitch. One man who is having fun in WWE and will be sticking around for at least a few more years is Sami Zayn. Fightful broke the news that Zayn has signed a new multi-year deal with WWE. There were rumors that this had taken place a while back around the same time that Kevin Owens re-signed with the company, but the news was reported this week. Nothing official. I can't say officially because WWE hasn't commented on it, but Zayn did go on Twitter and said, sticking around and having fun. That is the Sami Zayn way. That's a good keep for WWE. And if Sami is happy, then I'm happy for him. You know, he has shared screen time recently with Brock Lesnar. He is the number one contender for the Intercontinental title, whatever that title means at this point. And they have him in a celebrity angle with Johnny Knoxville heading into the Royal Rumble. He's getting more TV time than Ali is. But it works for his character, the whole paranoid conspiracy theorist. You know, he's very entertaining in the role. So that's a good keep for WWE. Rey Mysterio was announced as the cover boy for the WWE 2K22 video game, which will be released on March 11th. Which is a little unusual for a WWE game since they usually release them in October. There were people on social media I saw critical of the move. Rey Mysterio's name was trending because some morons were piling on him or trying to diminish, I guess, who he is. Oh, he's not a big enough star to be on the cover. Rey Mysterio's credentials, just because he's not featured in main events right now, Rey Mysterio's credentials speak for themselves. The man is a future Hall of Famer. I think it's a fine choice. And it's not even like it matters. What matters is how the game plays. There was no 2K21. This will be their first major game since 2K20, which was a complete disaster. I'm not counting that Battlegrounds game. Mysterio will have his career featured in the game Showcase Mode. And the game is promising a redesigned gameplay engine, a new control scheme, and some new game modes, including My GM mode, which allows players to be the general manager and draft their own roster. The first time that this will appear in a WWE game since SmackDown vs. Raw in 2008. Also, My Faction mode. I'd be surprised if we don't get that in the AEW game when it comes out. My Faction mode, which lets players collect and manage their own factions. And My Rise, which is what I guess they're calling My Career mode now. What I saw from the trailer looked... I like the commercial. And what I saw from the trailer looked good. It'll be releasing for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and Windows PC on Steam. And you know what that means. The return of Sound Off Gamer. Is not too far off. I have not done any gamer gameplays for a WWE game since 2K16. And I was horrible. Although I guess that's what made the videos somewhat entertaining. But I had fun every time I would play. And those, by the way, those old 2K16 gameplays, there were a handful of them. I do have them. They're in the Sound Off Gamer playlist on the YouTube. So all my old gamer videos are all organized in that playlist if you want to go back and watch some of them. But I've got a new machine now. I've got a Lenovo here. I've got the RTX 3080 card. I'm ready. I'm ready to dive back into this. So I am planning on picking up a copy when it comes out on Steam. Actor and singer Meatloaf died on Thursday at the age of 74 from COVID. That according to TMZ. He appeared as a guest host on Monday Night Raw in 2010, promoting his new album, and got RKO'd by Randy Orton. And Louis Anderson passed away the very next day at the age of 68 due to complications from blood cancer, which got my attention for obvious reasons. Although what he had was a very aggressive form of cancer, so I was very sad to hear that. And I don't believe Louis Anderson ever had any kind of wrestling or WWE connection, but I had no idea until this week, and I was looking up some Louis Anderson stuff, because I liked Louis and some of the movie roles he had, and I never watched the TV show, that whole Life with Louis thing, but Family Feud, I thought he was a pretty good host. Not the best host of the show, but you know I used to enjoy watching it when he was the host. But one thing I never knew about Louis Anderson until this week is that he was originally cast in the main role alongside Bronson Pinchot on Perfect Strangers. in the pilot episode. They shot an episode, the pilot episode, and I don't believe the actual episode has ever been released anywhere, but I saw the screenshots from it. And in that pilot, which never aired, he played the role of Lou Appleton. You know, Bronson played Balky, and I see the shots of them on set together, and it's so weird to see. And you see, you know, in the background and in the shop that they worked in that first episode, the boss is played by the same guy, Mr. Twinkacetti. But there's Louis Anderson. And the producers, I guess, they didn't think that the two of them had good chemistry. They thought things were a little off. And so when the show got picked up on ABC, they replaced Louis with Mark Lynn Baker. And they changed the name of the character from Lou Appleton to Larry Appleton. And the rest is history. That used to be one of my favorite shows growing up. Was Perfect Strangers. I cannot imagine Louis Anderson in that role at all. The Dance of Joy would have looked very different. We are less than a week away from the Royal Rumble. I'm going to have some early predictions for the pay-per-view after my Raw and SmackDown thoughts. But this here is no prediction. This is a spoiler. Someone will walk away with an Edge Rated R Superstar Custom Championship belt. Designed by JBToysAndCollectibles.com. This thing is a beaut. The actual design reminds me of the classic Intercontinental title. And it can be yours when you enter the Custom Championship Belt Contest right now on WrestleRumble.com. It is only $1 to enter. $1. You can enter as many times as you want, but it's only $1 for entry. But that's not the only custom belt being given away. WrestleRumble picks some of his favorite Rumble moments from over the years to design two more custom Royal Rumble moments belts. You can see a picture of what they look like on the website. First place winner will win the Edge belt. Second and third place winners will each receive one of two Royal Rumble moments belts. You got Ric Flair's post-Rumble promo in 92 is represented on one plate. John Cena entering the 2008 Rumble at number 30. You got Stone Cold sitting on the turnbuckle in 97 looking at his imaginary watch, waiting for the next entrant to come to the ring. Those are some of the moments with their own dedicated plates. These belts are sick. I will be drawing the winners live and at random on my Royal Rumble review stream next Saturday. And as I do with these contests, I always am very honored to be the master of ceremonies. But you can't win unless you enter first. So cutoff time is 8 p.m. that same day for both this and the Royal Rumble Pick'em Contest. Entries are open for that as well. You answer a series of prop questions like who you think will win the men's and women's Rumble matches. Who do you think is going to eliminate Omos from the men's? You know, will Alexa Bliss be the one or one of the final four left in the women's Rumble? All kinds of questions like that. So try to give that some thought before you enter the Pick'em Contest. The Pick'em is live right now. Winners for that will be announced by WrestleRumble next Sunday. But go to WrestleRumble.com to enter both contests and be sure to follow at WrestleRumble on Twitter and Instagram to make sure that you are in the loop on any and all contest updates, including the winners. That's at WrestleRumble on Twitter and Instagram. Nothing of any great note happened on Monday Night Raw this week. They were up against a monster NFL playoff game. In fact, the first time ever an NFL playoff game on a Monday night. Even The Rock was hanging out with the Manning brothers on ESPN2 watching the game. The Rock wasn't sitting there watching Monday Night Raw, I can tell you that. The Rock is a smart man. But all things considered, ratings-wise, they held up well against the game, which is why I didn't say anything before when I mentioned Dynamite doing over 1 million viewers on Wednesday. And being number one for the night on cable, you'll notice I didn't say a word about them getting a better demo number than Raw, which they did for the very first time on separate nights, granted, but their demo number was higher on Wednesday than what Raw did on Monday. But Raw was against an NFL playoff game. So, you know, it's a great number for AEW, congrats to them, but I don't see it as being some kind of big victory for them. We got the two men challenging for the WWE and the Universal title, respectively, at the Royal Rumble, Bobby Lashley and Seth Rollins, pit against each other in a match that we already knew was not going to have a proper finish because neither man should be losing before the Royal Rumble. And we got the old can they coexist angle. Can they coexist as partners with Becky Lynch and Doudrop as a team against Bianca Belair and Liv Morgan, both of whom declared themselves for the Women's Royal Rumble match. Again, pay attention to who lost here. It was Liv Morgan eating the pin yet again to a bonsai splash by Doudrop. I shake my head and laugh at the people who continue to insist that Liv Morgan should win the Royal Rumble and then win the title at WrestleMania. These people are just walking around like Sandra Bullock in Bird Box. Just willfully blind to all that's going on. This woman continues to lose every single week. Every single match. She is not winning anything. Or she shouldn't. I actually wouldn't put it past WWE to think that this story could extend into WrestleMania and put Liv Morgan over. In fact, if you made a top five, who are the likeliest names to win the Women's Rumble, you probably would put Liv Morgan somewhere in the top five. Liv Morgan should not be winning the Royal Rumble. Seth Rollins was on the Kevin Owens show and made it clear that when he beats Roman Reigns at the Rumble, he is bringing the Universal title back to Raw, which excited Kevin Owens, who said that he's going to win the Royal Rumble, and then they could give the fans the biggest main event possible, with him challenging Rollins for the championship at Mania. Owens then pinned Damian Priest, the current United States champion, with a stunner, after Owens feigned a knee injury. That was, I believe, the first time that Damian Priest has been pinned in a singles match since being called up to the main roster. A point that they evidently did not think was important enough to have the announcers mention, because nothing really matters on this show. So they didn't say anything about that. Last week, the Alpha Academy won the Raw Tag Team titles from RK-Bro. This week, they held a graduation ceremony in the ring. They even came out to Pomp and Circumstance, the anthem of every graduation ceremony that wrestling fans, real wrestling fans, will forever associate with the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Gable and Otis were out there in their cap and gown. The people of Tulsa booed Chad Gable, and he told them not to boo education. You know, Oklahoma is ranked number 42 out of the 50 states by U.S. News and World Report in their education rankings. It's no wonder they would boo Chad Gable. We have a few smart fans who listen to the podcast in Oklahoma who are smarter than that. They would never boo this man. Shout out to Cody and Austin. By the way, do you know which state ranks the best in education? New Jersey. I find that hard to believe. He presented Otis, did Gable, with a diploma, and he said that he graduated with the highest of honors. And then Matt Riddle interrupted in a cap and gown of his own. He started reading off a napkin. He said that he took from the breakfast buffet. That's how Paul Heyman used to write some of those ECW shows, on a napkin. Gable called him an idiot, said that he and Orton could get a rematch if they passed an academic aptitude test. And Otis got annoyed at Riddle. He left the ring to go after him, which allowed Randy Orton to swoop into the ring and deliver an RKO to Chad Gable. And then he put on the cap and gown, and he accepted Gable's challenge to an academic contest, or whatever he called it, aptitude test. I guess they're doing that on Raw tomorrow night. And Orton did the Orton douche pose on the middle rope with the cap and gown on. He looked like the captain of the football team, laying out the class valedictorian and then gloating about it. Brings back terrible memories. I enjoyed this. It was corny, but I like how they've leaned into the whole, you know, Gable graduated with the 4.0 GPA stuff. They leaned into a real life thing, and it's starting to pay off for him in spite of all the losing that they've done now for months on TV. I like the segment. Now we just have to see if they put the belts right back on Orton and Riddle, or if they work towards a WrestleMania match between the two of them. I could see Riddle eliminating Orton in the Royal Rumble match. Last week on the podcast, I mentioned Finn Balor's name. First time I've mentioned his name in a while, how he's been gone and, you know, it's time to get him back on TV. I believe he was back in Ireland spending time with his family. He might have been better off staying in Ireland. They aired footage of Balor beating Austin Theory on Raw last month. back live, Theory walked into Vince McMahon's tomb, I mean office. The way they shoot all of these McMahon Theory segments is it's so weird. It's different than any of the other backstage segments that they do. It's as if they shoot it differently for Vince because, you know, either he has to look a certain way or maybe he just doesn't trust himself to get through the segments in one take anymore. It just has all of these weird cuts. But he threatened to beat Theory up himself if he failed to beat Balor on this show. He said there would be nothing left but blood, snot, and broken teeth. And then he would take a selfie with Theory's body after, or what was left of it, and send it to his mother. Theory's mother. Not Vince's mother. Vince's mother is still alive, believe it or not. He tweeted something about her 100th birthday during the first year of the pandemic. So what year of the pandemic are we in now? Year three or 28, it feels like. So that means that she turns 102 later this year. All this talk about what's going to happen to WWE when Vince dies, this guy's going to outlive us all. He's not going anywhere. Anyway, a very weird storyline. I guess in his mind, though, it's getting Austin Theory over, but it's still a very weird storyline. I think Theory ends up going the distance in the Royal Rumble, not winning it, but I think he's going to be in there early, and I think he's going to last a very long time before he gets dumped out. And I still maintain that he is the one to take that U.S. title from Damian Priest, I think at WrestleMania. Theory went out after this segment. He pinned Finn Balor clean in the middle of the ring. Then he took a selfie. Then he beat up Balor after the match, hit him with his finish a second time before taking another selfie. Yeah, there was a report on the website wrestlingnews.co that said Balor has moved into the spot, effectively, that Jeff Hardy was in as the reliable veteran whose job it is to put over the younger talent. And that Vince McMahon does not see him as anything more than a mid-card guy. I don't have a problem with having Balor put over Austin Theory. If they see Theory as the future, and I believe that he is, beating a Finn Balor is going to mean more than him beating fucking T-Bar would. It's how you give a new star like Theory some credibility is by beating somebody who already has credibility. It's by beating somebody with a name. Realistically, who else is he going to beat right now? I mean, it's not like they have a lot of strong baby faces at that sort of mid to upper mid-card level who aren't already a champion. I don't want Theory going out there yet and beating champions in the ring. You know, Randy Orton, he's busy. There's AJ Styles, who just went babyface. And after that, there really isn't anybody else with a name who Theory could go in there and beat, other than a Finn Balor. I do think that Theory feuding with Edge is something that we ought to see this year. But I strongly disagree with the idea that all he's useful for is putting over other people. That's the role that Dolph Ziggler has occupied for years. I don't see how anybody who saw Balor during his last NXT run can think that he is only useful as a guy to get others over. That's how you know Vince McMahon didn't pay a lick of attention to NXT until Triple H had his heart attack, and then they decided to blow up the brand and make it their own. And then he took a mild interest in NXT. He still probably doesn't pay much attention to it, let's be honest. That's Bruce's job now. That's not for Vince. That's for Bruce to worry about. That's why the NXT creative team now reports to Bruce. The Nikki A.S.H. stuff continues to drag Rhea Ripley down further into the abyss. They were supposed to have a match when Carmella and Zelina Vega interrupted, doing her English accent. And as Rhea was watching them, Nikki attacked her from behind, drove her into the ring steps. Rhea Ripley she's too good for this shit. She just is too good for this. This is just awful. This is just fucking awful. Maryse wanted to meet face-to-face, mother-to-mother, with Beth Phoenix in the middle of the ring. Edge went out with Beth because they smelled a rat. Maryse admitted that, look, I don't want the match at the Royal Rumble. I thought that, you know, this match should be canceled. We should be friends, not enemies. And Beth wasn't buying any of this. She was walking down to the ring to enter the ring and confront Maryse, when Miz attacked Edge from behind on the outside, and the two of them started brawling. This distracted Beth Phoenix, who had her back turned, and allowed Maryse to hit her from behind with her purse, which they later revealed was loaded with a brick inside. Which, by the way things are going here in New York, is probably the way that all women should walk down the street, with a brick in their purse. But this was like Sherry's loaded purse when Hogan and Beefcake fought Savage and Zeus back at SummerSlam. I thought this angle was fine, just to put some heat on Maryse heading into the mixed match at the Rumble. Miz later announced that this week, tomorrow night, he is going to be throwing his wife a huge birthday party. I believe Maryse turns 39. She wears it very well. I'm sure, by the way, that birthday party will go as planned without any interruptions whatsoever. They aired a tremendous video package for the Brock Lesnar-Bobby Lashley match at the Royal Rumble. I love this. This was a great, great video. They dove into their backgrounds and their fight credentials. This video got me pumped. I was already pumped up for the match, but this video got me even more pumped up for this match. This is the sort of thing we need more of on these shows. Now, it works best with these two because both guys are legit fighters, right? Who you could believe that they could kill somebody. There aren't too many people on the roster I feel that way about outside of Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley. But I definitely think they ought to lean into doing more of these videos with the right people going forward. Because these packages are still top-notch. And when you think about WWE production and, you know, what are they truly great at and head and shoulders above any other company out there right now, it's when they put a package together like this to really sell you on a big pay-per-view main event. Nobody does it better. Alexa Bliss was back in her therapist's office for another session. He wanted to play word association with her. He asked her what she thinks of when she hears words like trust, friends, and home. After every word, she just said, Lily. When he asked about the word imaginary, she glared angrily at him and stood up, at which point he said, oh, our time is up, and he left the room. That was it. That was the whole segment. Bliss on Twitter posted something earlier in the week about being patient and letting things play out. Let it play out, guys. Let it play out. When you let things play out with WWE, you might get a decent resolution to the story. What would you say? What's a fair assessment? I would say maybe 30% of the time. All right, 35%. Am I being too generous? I think I am. Let it play out, guys. Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley went to a predictable DQ when Lashley was attacked by Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, the Geek Squad. Lashley made his own comeback on both of them and speared Benjamin through the barricade by the timekeeper's area. While this was happening, the Usos entered through the crowd and gave Rollins a double superkick. This is not a match I would have booked. Lesnar and Lashley will have a weigh-in tomorrow night for their title match, which is the perfect kind of segment, I think, to do with those two. And I'm hoping that this week we get some verbal jousting between Heyman and MVP. This is their last chance to do it before the Royal Rumble. And a quick programming note, Raw and NXT both are being bumped off USA Network for 2 weeks next month due to the Winter Olympics. On February 7th and 13th, Raw will instead air on Sci-Fi, while USA airs men's figure skating and freestyle skiing. I'm not sure which is worse, Raw being bumped for a dog show like they used to be, or being bumped for men's figure skating. And NXT will also air on Sci-Fi. Their dates are February 8th and 15th. NXT will be lucky to be on USA at all by the time this year is over. Two NXT names were at the SmackDown tapings on Friday night for a dark match. LA Knight beat Roderick Strong before the show went on the air. I have been baffled by LA Knight toiling away on that NXT show, and he should already be on Raw or SmackDown. So hopefully that means he is on his way up soon. It doesn't always work out that way. I remember several months ago, Dakota Kai had a series of dark matches. I think it was with Aaliyah. It was either Aaliyah or Xia Li. Aaliyah is on TV now. Xia Li is on TV now. Dakota Kai is not. But of these two names, if one of them was going to be called up, it would be LA Knight. It would not be Roddy. Roddy, I don't have a lot of hope for. Roddy will not be a star on the main roster. LA Knight, though, he should be. Now, there were cameos on SmackDown this week by Eric Bischoff, Jeff Jarrett, and Summer Rae. The only one who does not yet have a podcast with Conrad Thompson, although give it time. In due time, I'm sure she will. But Bischoff was just there in a very brief segment talking to Adam Pearce. When Sonya Deville came in and Pearce said, look, you've really been screwing over Naomi. I'm going to go to upper management and request that there be a match made for SmackDown this coming Friday, one-on-one between you and Naomi. And Sonya seemed to not really be all that bothered by that. She said, okay, fine. As if she knows something that Adam Pearce doesn't. And then Bischoff looked at Pearce and said, now that's leadership. That's all he did. That's why they brought in Eric Bischoff. And then Eric went on Twitter and posted a picture of his food from catering. So maybe he just showed up for the good catering. But we had also Jeff Jarrett showed up, very brief segment in the back, talking to Rick Boogs, GCW star Jeff Jarrett, who is wrestling on their pay-per-view tonight. And Summer Rae was just sitting in the crowd eyeballing Natalya before her match with Aaliyah. So they're teasing something with Natty and Summer Rae. Summer Rae is going to be in the Royal Rumble match next Saturday. The only stuff on this show really worth a damn was the stuff with Roman Reigns and the Usos, Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. Because we were going to have a championship celebration for Roman Reigns, who was celebrating 508 days. A new record as the Universal Champion when Seth Rollins interrupted and Rollins was talking about how Roman has the Usos, you know, doing his dirty work for him, and he kind of compared it to me and Mox. It's like when me and Mox were in the Shield with you. So now Moxley, which is another stage name that it's not his actual name. Some people I do believe think that John Moxley is his real name. He left WWE, he left Dean Ambrose behind, and he's just John Moxley, using his real name. In fact, his name is Jonathan Good. So this Moxley character now, he has entered the WWE universe, or metaverse, however you want to call it. Little Mox mentioned on the show on Friday night. But Rollins was there, Owen showed up as well, because Rollins needed a partner. They set up a tag team match for the main event, with Rollins and Owens wrestling the Usos, with the stipulation being that if the Usos won, Seth Rollins would lose his championship match at the Rumble against Roman Reigns. However, if Rollins' team won, the Usos would be barred from ringside and barred from interfering in the Royal Rumble match, the title match. So I liked it because it actually gave the main event high stakes that tied into the Royal Rumble. And I thought it was also the match of the night for either show on Friday night. I enjoyed that main event more than any other. The finish, you had to see the finish coming. Roman Reigns interfered right when it looked like the Usos were about to lose. He said, fuck it, got in the ring, and gave Seth Rollins a Superman punch. Now, had a couple of people point out to me, would it not have made more sense for Roman to Superman punch his cousin, to get Rollins and Owens disqualified and give himself the night off at the Royal Rumble? Yes, actually, that would have made sense too. But I don't think they're going for the idea that Roman is a coward who wants out of the match. I think he wants the match. I think he's sick and tired of Seth Rollins going on TV and telling everybody that, you know, there's three things in life that are certain: death, taxes, and Rollins beating Reigns. And I think it's annoying him, and he wants to go into the pay-per-view and beat the fuck out of this guy. So Roman is not very often booked to be the sort of cowardly heel. And I think he kind of would have come off that way a little bit. Although, you could have done the finish either way. Either way would have made sense. But I enjoyed the match. I enjoyed the fact that they raised the stakes for it. He punched Rollins in the face, and he's going to prove at the Royal Rumble that he could finally beat this fucker. and he doesn't need anybody else's help. Now, this Saturday is the Royal Rumble. From the Dome at America's Center in St. Louis, they've got over 30,000 tickets out for the show so far. They're probably going to claim 40,000, but that's a good number of people. We've got Edge and Beth Phoenix taking on The Miz and Maryse. We still have one more Raw to go, but the last we saw these four, Maryse hit Beth in the back with a brick in her purse. I don't see any reason for this to extend beyond the Rumble. I've got Edge and Beth finishing this off here. I suppose they could carry it over into the Saudi Arabia show in some way. I don't see this going to WrestleMania. I think this is a win for Edge and Beth Phoenix. We have Becky Lynch against Doudrop for the Raw Women's title. It's the biggest match of Piper Niven's career, but she is not winning that championship. So I have Becky retaining. We're still missing 9 names for the 30-woman Royal Rumble match. I'm not even sure WWE knows at this point. Probably put some NXT names in there. Flesh it out a little bit. We know Charlotte Flair, the SmackDown Women's Champion, is going to be in it. Mickey James was on Busted Open Radio and said that she intends to walk out to the ring with her Impact Knockouts title around her waist. That is, unless they tell her 10 seconds before she's supposed to walk out that she can't. Which would be a very WWE thing to do. We know they're bringing back a lot of past names like Lita, Michelle McCool, Kelly Kelly, Summer Rae. I wouldn't be surprised to see Molly Holly. Given that she works for them, Molly Holly make an appearance in the Rumble. I think she's made one before. Alexa Bliss has not officially been announced for the Rumble, but I am expecting some trickery from her to lead to Charlotte's elimination. And I believe Bianca Belair is the pick to go with to win the Women's Royal Rumble match and then go on to challenge Becky Lynch and beat her for her championship at WrestleMania. We have Roman Reigns defending the Universal title against Seth Rollins. Now we know the Usos are barred from ringside. They've been laying it on thick that Reigns just can't beat Rollins. Seth has his number. And Seth is promising to win the title and bring it back to Monday Night Raw. Seth Rollins has a real shot here of being put over in this match and winning the championship. They can still get to Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania for the WWE title, even if Rollins wins and takes the Universal title over to Raw. I don't see it going that way, but I also don't think it's a slam dunk guarantee that Roman Reigns is going to win. I hope he does. I think he should, and I think he will. I think Roman continues to reigns. Sound like Paul Heyman now. He continues to reigns for a few more months. And that leads me to the WWE Championship. Brock Lesnar defending against Bobby Lashley. Two very strong title matches on this show. This is one of them. But I'm looking forward to both matches. This is a match I've been waiting a very long time to see. And it took Roman Reigns getting COVID for us to get it. But I'll take it. The Brock Lesnar-Paul Heyman reunion was very sudden. It came out of nowhere right after Reigns fired Heyman. I love the two of them together, but I smell a rat. And whether it's a full-blown betrayal or it's some sort of accidentally on-purpose type of thing, I think Brock Lesnar is getting screwed out of the WWE title, and Bobby Lashley is going to walk out of the Royal Rumble a 2-time WWE champion. Brock's on TV 2 weeks ago acting like he doesn't even know who Lashley is. He's calling him a wannabe Brock Lesnar, laughing in the man's face. It's all the more damaging if Brock then goes to the Rumble and just beats him in 5 minutes and proves that this guy is a scrub who's just nobody but a Brock Lesnar wannabe. I think that would be very damaging to Bobby Lashley. You know, jovial Brock Lesnar has been a lot of fun to watch, but he's been awfully full of himself lately. I think it bites him on the ass on Saturday and Lashley wins. And that then leads into the Men's Royal Rumble match later in the show, where we see Brock Lesnar steal some poor schlub's number, take their spot, and he wins the Royal Rumble match. And then they can milk his decision for a few weeks on TV because he would have a case to challenge either champion, right? Because he could challenge Lashley in a rematch to try to get his win back and his belt back, or he could resume his feud with Roman Reigns, especially if we find out that Heyman was still with the Bloodline this entire time. So that's why the only reason this really works is if Heyman screws over Lesnar and reveals that he did so for Roman Reigns. Or the Usos get involved. Usos can't interfere in the WWE title match, but nobody said they couldn't stick their nose in the Universal title match. But something like that has to happen to give Brock Lesnar a reason to want to challenge Roman Reigns at WrestleMania and not just go back to Bobby Lashley. And that's how I see things playing out. But ultimately, you know, he'll choose Reigns, and that would free up Lashley at Mania to defend his title against the winner of the Elimination Chamber match in Saudi Arabia. If the Elimination Chamber match ends up being contested, either for the I guess it could be for the WWE Championship, but if it was contested to, let's say, determine a challenger for the title, I think it would end up either being Rollins, who just goes full-on babyface, or Big E. But those are my early Rumble predictions. If anything happens on the shows this week to change my mind, I will talk about it on the SmackDown stream on YouTube Friday night. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can always email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. Like Andy from Garland, Texas, with the Rumble coming, I have a scenario which I feel would lead well into WrestleMania. Sasha Banks makes a shocking return from injury akin to 2008 John Cena and eliminates Charlotte Flair. Flair, like Hogan in the 92 Rumble, is a sore loser and eliminates Sasha, and Bianca wins the Rumble and faces Becky for the Raw belt while Sasha challenges Charlotte for the SmackDown belt. What do you think? So I get what you're saying when you make the comparison to John Cena. It's very different. Cena had already been out for a few months. Cena had a torn pec, and he was not supposed to be back for a long time. So I wouldn't say it would be as shocking as John Cena in 2008. Otherwise, I mean, I don't hate the idea. I'd love to see Sasha back in the Rumble, because it means that she, you know, wasn't as hurt as they claimed that she was. You know, the rumor is that she won't be back until mid-February. So if she's able to come back at the Rumble, I think that's fantastic. What I wouldn't do, though, I wouldn't work it exactly like the 92 Rumble. I would have Sasha eliminate Charlotte earlier in the match, or at least not at the very end. I wouldn't want Bianca to win only because, you know, of something like that. I would do it a little earlier in the match. But otherwise, I mean, I'm okay with it. I mean, it's not a bad idea. Umar from Sheffield, England. Should AEW do an angle between CM Punk and Colt Cabana? No. I think it would be beneath Punk to do it at this point. I mean, Cabana is so low on the totem pole in that company. Of all the stars that Punk could be working with, Colt Cabana would not even be probably in the top 10 on my list. And I doubt they would want to work together anyway. I mean, look, even if they've made amends from their legal issues, maybe they're on speaking terms now. I don't know. I don't know what their status is, but even if they made up, I mean, why would they want to dredge up all of that shit? Which they would have to do. I mean, the only point of even doing that storyline would be if you're playing into the real life stuff. You know, even if they made up and they're okay with each other now, why would they want to dredge up all of that shit? But no, there's a lot of other names on that roster I'd much rather see CM Punk working with. Colt Cabana is not one of them. Lucas from Springfield, Ohio. What do you think of a scenario where when the Roman and Brock feud ends at WrestleMania, Paul Heyman comes out with the winner only to betray them and have him end Raw with Big E? It could pay off all the times Heyman would hype up Big E on Talking Smack and give Big E a much-needed heel turn. Boy, you know, Heyman's really whoring himself out, isn't he? Fired by Roman, goes back to Brock, dumps Brock for Big E. This guy gets around. I like the callback to those Talking Smack segments. I don't see it, though. I don't see Big E as a heel. I don't think he wants to be a heel, and I don't think the company sees him as a heel either. They're not going to split up the New Day. I think the New Day will be together forever in some form or fashion, even if they're not on the same brand. I think those guys are always going to be together in some form. You know, Big E is a likable guy. They want him showing off his personality and not being this sort of stoic heel, you know, kind of like he was when he first came in and they put him with Dolph and AJ. I think there's a way to make it work, you know, if you want to put him and Paul Heyman together, but it's not going to happen. I think Heyman is beyond the point of linking up with somebody else. You know, he was with Brock almost that entire time. He had that one run with Punk. And then he had the recent run with Roman. They tried with him and Cesaro. I think that could have worked, and they gave up on that way too quickly. They put him with McGillicuddy, right? Curtis Axel, whatever he was at that point. That was a fail. I think the idea of having new Heyman guys or Heyman girls, I think that ship has sailed. I just don't see it happening. Doug, from Lawrence, Massachusetts. Do you agree with Vince Russo? No. But I will read the rest of your question anyway. Do you agree with Vince Russo when he says that WWE really started going down the drain as far as losing viewers when the company decided to let Stephanie McMahon be the head of creative? Even though she is no longer in that role, it is hard to argue that creative has not been as good since she took that job all those years ago. No, I don't think that's completely fair. The numbers started going down a little bit when Austin got hurt. And when Austin missed all those months after neck surgery. You know, he was their top attraction. And Rock and Triple H held things down as best they could. Undertaker, Kane, Kurt Angle, you know, Jericho. They had a great ensemble cast in 2000 in that company in Austin's absence. They even tried to push Rikishi. But the numbers dipped a little. And then it was the Austin heel turn in 2001, which wasn't Stephanie's idea. Stephanie took over as the head writer in November of 2000. But it, you know, the Austin heel turn in April of 2001, that was Austin's idea. And it was a bad one. And he admits that even now. If he could go back and do it over again, he would not have turned heel. That's really when things began a noticeable decline. That and the aftermath of the invasion angle. Stephanie became head writer November of 2000. It wasn't like an immediate thing where she took over and things just plummeted. Or you can draw a direct line, I think, from one to the other. In the years that followed, they elevated her from head writer to, I think the title was creative director or some such thing. And it was a steady decline from there, but you know, she was hiring the kinds of people that her father wanted her to hire. You think she had all the autonomy in the world to run the creative team the way that she wanted to? It's always been the Vince McMahon show. And she was probably just following directives on what her father was looking for in terms of writers and Hollywood writers and soap opera writers and all these people they hired and they brought in. She was by no means some creative visionary, but I don't think it's fair to lay it all at her feet either. You can lay it at the feet of her father. That's where it belongs. Nir from Israel, still kicking Hodgkins in the ass. Who do you think is the best and worst TNA / Impact champion of all time? The best is a tough one. For me, it's between three people. It's between Kurt Angle, Bobby Roode, and Bobby Lashley. I am inclined to go with Kurt Angle. I think he had the most number of titles. I think it was six or seven. But not even the quantity. It was just the quality of the matches that he was having. I think Kurt Angle is tough to top. I think Bobby Roode held it the longest in a single reign. Roode was great during that run. For a single reign, if you were to ask me for one single reign, it's Bobby Roode. But the best overall champion, I'm going to go with Kurt Angle. It's surprising that Samoa Joe and AJ Styles did not have more time with the title than they did. The worst would be a tie between Alberto Del Dipshit and Tessa Blanchard. Both of them barely had time to defend the title. You know, Alberto got suspended and stripped, I think, within a month of him winning the championship. I think Tessa had a couple of singles matches on TV. I don't know if they were title defenses or not. She had a handful of matches on TV after she won the belt, and then COVID hit, and she didn't wrestle for them again. I think she was in Mexico with her fiancé, I think. She got stripped. She got fired a few months later. So, Alberto and Tessa. the two worst world champions in Impact history. Rodimus Prime from Alexander City, Alabama. We all know how bad Bret Hart's run in WCW was, but no one seems to talk about Mike Awesome having a bad run. He had some bad gimmicks like the Fat Chick Thriller and That 70s Guy to the Canadian Killer. He went from being a major badass in ECW to a complete afterthought in WCW. What are your thoughts? I don't have much else to add to what you just said. You hit the nail on the head. They had a 300-pound guy who flew around and did dives. I mean, today people wouldn't really think much of it, but 25 years ago, that was a rare sight to see. And this guy went through three different gimmicks in less than a year in WCW. There also had to be a better way to debut him. You know, in ECW, he was the biggest guy there. But in WCW, his first appearance, he's in there with Kevin Nash. You know, a guy who's actually bigger than him. So, Awesome was a really big guy in ECW, but in WCW, he was still big, but you put him in there right off the bat with Kevin Nash, who's probably got, I don't know how many inches on him. I mean, not the best visual. Not the ideal way to introduce him, and obviously it only got worse for him from there. Alberto in Laredo, Texas. Hopefully not the Alberto. My question is simple. How do you manage to do it all? Watching all the shows, the sound off, the extras, announcing your other job, how do you find the energy? Brother, I don't know. I would love to say it's the coffee or the caffeine, but I don't drink coffee and I don't drink caffeine. So I don't know what to tell you. And that's with going to bed at probably 1 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning on a lot of nights. I don't have a good answer for you. I do the best I can with the time I have. Time is my greatest enemy. There's never enough of it. And I only hope that you guys enjoy the work I put out. That's all the validation I need. It's not easy, but it's fun. So if you keep tuning in, I'll keep pumping out the content. And keep emailing me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Again, I do read everything you send in to me, but I will try to use as many on the show as possible. I cannot get to every single one, but I do appreciate all the feedback. I'm going to be live tonight whenever the GCW show goes off the air. I have a bad feeling this is going to be a long show. But whenever they go off the air tonight, I will be live on YouTube for the recap, my first GCW pay-per-view. I mean, this is their first time on traditional pay-per-view, I believe. They're on pay-per-view and Fight TV from the Hammerstein Ballroom. They're going to have a sellout crowd, well over 2,000 people in the building. It is a fun atmosphere for a wrestling show. I have been in that building many times before. I very much enjoyed the ECW One Night Stand shows from that building. And so we will see how the show comes off production-wise on their end. I know they don't have the production values of WWE, but we'll see how the show comes off tonight. Jon Moxley defending his title in the main event against Homicide, and a bunch of other appearances, maybe some surprises on the show tonight. We will see who answers the Briscoes Open Challenge for those GCW tag team titles. But I'll be live tonight, and then live with you again on Wednesday night for Dynamite, and next Saturday is the Royal Rumble, a rare Saturday Royal Rumble. So obviously when the Rumble goes off the air, I'll be live on YouTube for that as well. So now would be a damn good time to sub to the channel if you are not already subbed. And if you want to become a channel member, you'll have access to that 92 Rumble watch along and all the other little goodies that are up there and that I have planned for the future. I appreciate your support. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a fantastic final full week here of the month of January. It's almost February already. We're almost 1 month down. Only 11 more to go. I'll see you guys tonight for the GCW recap and back for 7:41 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Beth Phoenix is standing in the aisle. She is making these over the top. She's mean mugging the camera, and she's just standing there. Thank God Kevin Dunn played her music, or else she might still be standing there. Poor woman was like, she was frozen, like she was trapped in carbonite or something. I don't know what was going on.
The Solomonster sounds off, each week bursting with content. podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
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 Solomonster sounds off.